Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, while together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
A good friend of mine that I've known for about 3 years is going to talk, and it's my privilege to introduce you to a guy that I really love to work with. His name is Jamie.
Thank you, Kevin. He always makes fun of me because the first time I met him, I gave him a hug, and he's from the north. That was weird. I did not put my leg around him. He always says that, too. Look, if it was Donald Duck, I would have hugged him. We needed an executive pastor. We've had a lot of fun doing this together, and I hope you've had a chance to meet our staff. I was just with Susie. We're going to do a little baptism for a few people after this service outside. And Tim and Brett and Anikos, we have such a wonderful team of people. It's been a really, really, in the chaos of all this physical space, there's really been this, it's been pretty smooth because our team is so, so gifted and so good. It's just been a lot of fun. I found myself full of gratitude for this season in our church. We're in a series called I Can Relate, and there are some subtopics in this. I can relate to myself. I can relate to my partners in life. We talked a little bit about I can relate to myself, and now we're shifting on to I can relate to my partners in life. Now, we talked about, do we do a marriage thing? Is this a parenting thing? We came up with this idea of partners in life because the fact is a lot of us go through seasons of life where we're partnering with people. Could be in a band, could be in a business. If you have children, you know you're parenting them in a different way in the early years than you are in the adolescent years. And then as you function as a consultant in later on in their adult years. And so there's these shifting dynamics to relationships. But what about the people that you're partnering with, that you're spending the most amount of time with? And when it comes to partners in life, how do we have relationships that thrive? Well, today I thought we'd drop in on two things that are both interrelated. To be present to those people that we care for most, the ones who are closest to us, partnering with us in life, and to be present through the art of listening. So that's what we're going to drop in today. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 14 and 27. The human body has many parts, but the many parts make up one whole body. So Paul is a writer, and he's writing to a church plant, and he's using a metaphor of the human body. Ears and eyes and legs and all these things help the body function. He says this is the way it is with the body of Christ. All of you together are Christ's body, and each of you is a part of it. Now, this is an interesting conversation simply because there was a time that the body of Christ wasn't us. It was in one human form named Jesus. So Jesus actually walks the planet for 33 years. He's got a ministry. There's something that happens toward the end of his life most of us are aware of. He is crucified. He then comes back from the dead. And he then ascends into heaven, which picture transitioning into another dimensional reality. And he says, when I go off into this other space, I'm going to send my spirit to more actively be present on the planet in you. So you're now taking my place. It's so like picture tag team wrestling. Jesus is like, to us. All of us are like, oh, okay, it's us now. So you don't have Jesus' body. You have us. So Christ is now actively displaying his love to the world, instead of through Jesus, through us. And there's something happens that when we come together, you bring these light sources together, we're the light of the world, when you bring these light sources together, we shine brighter. There is a different dynamic. Another great illustration will be, imagine watching a band. You see one guy with an acoustic guitar, but suddenly you add the rest of the band, the dynamic changes. You see one lady with a violin, you add a full orchestra and a conductor, the dynamic changes. Something happens. It's more rich. It's more full. It's this whole broader and richer and bigger dynamic. It's the same thing with us. So we're actually meant to do life together. Now, this can be difficult because sometimes we're like, I don't want to do life with people because people hurt people. And believe it or not, this actually happens in the church. And then if you've been hurt in the church, sometimes you're like, I'm not really interested in being part of a church again. But here's the deal. Whether you're interested or not, you are. If you're a follower of Jesus, then you're a part of the church. The question is just how often you're interacting. At Journey, you're going to find there's a place we're generally, it's pretty chill, pretty casual around here. But the place we poke and prod the most is in this place that's relationally centered. There's this passage in John that we refer to a lot. The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to give you life abundantly. Jesus' teaching in John 10:10. And he's basically saying, it's not okay to simply survive. The kingdom way is about thriving. That there is this aliveness. You're meant to enjoy and embrace and gulp life. And if you're just existing, well, then there's something hellish about that, because you have something to give to the world. You're meant to co-create with God, but you can't do it alone. In isolation, something's always malfunctioning, so you're invited to come together. Well, what's one of the greatest obstacles to coming together? Conversation. What's one of the greatest obstacles to healthy conversation? Listening. Being present. And not being distracted. It's really, really hard to simply be present. Mike Mason says this, people are the presence of God on the earth. You want to interact with God? Interact with people. God expressed his spirituality by entering into human relationships, by living and dying as one of us. God did it, he modeled it. He practiced the presence of people by becoming one himself. So too, each one of us must find a way to join the human race, casting off our separateness and throwing in our lot with others. So for those of you that like to be contrarians, or you like to be cynics, or you like to stand on the outside, or maybe you call it being an introvert, or you just, whatever the temptation is to isolate, pay attention to go. Sometimes, often, we're called to cast out or cast off the separateness, the thing like, I'm too unique, I'm too different, I'm better than or worse than. No, I'm one of, which means I'm meant to engage. As difficult as it may be, because on the other side of that difficulty, if you stay at it, there is joy, there is peace, and there is meaning. It's the quintessential deathbed confession. Rarely do you hear at a deathbed somebody going, I just spent way too much time with my family. Like, I haven't heard that story yet. I wish I would have stopped spending so much time with my daughter. That was my problem. I just loved people too much. No, what's the deathbed? I worked too hard. I was too distracted. I was too preoccupied. That pulls us off into hell. So we're called to be in relationship with people. Relationships matter. Let's drop into a couple of specific dynamics. Let's do the first, will be parenting. Emma K. Halbert says this, parents are prone to give their children everything except the one thing they need the most, time. Time for listening, time for understanding, time for helping, and time for guiding. It sounds simple, but in reality, it's the most difficult and most sacrificial task of parenthood. It's not accidental that when you have a baby or a young child, they demand time from you. Because some of us, especially if you start to have kids later in life, you've lived a lot of life like on your own. And there are certain comforts and conveniences you like. And the next thing you know, you have a child and they disrupt your world. And it's not casual disruption. I want to eat now. And when they're young, that doesn't come out in English, it comes out in a scream. And you go, well, I don't really want to feed you. They'll keep screaming. Oh, I guess I have to feed you. I pooped in my pants. I'd like a new diaper now. I don't want to. They'll keep screaming. Now, if this is happening with your husband, that's a different story. But we'll stay with the parenting thing. So it's a whole different thing. The point is, what's happening, that's, by the way, that developmental thing happens for a reason, because we, by nature, apart from paying attention to who we are in Christ, by nature, we just go off to our own specific comfort and convenience. That's the idolatry of the sin nature of our human reality. And so it's not accidental that when you have a baby, they're demanding that they have needs. Relationships matter. We're called to time. Now, what happens is kids get older, and we get a kid asks for time. We begin to negotiate a little bit more when there's a value conflict, whether or not we're going to give it to them. And the value conflicts show up a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's work. Hey, I can't give you time because I have to work. Sometimes it's entertainment. I can't give you time because I want to be entertained this way. Sometimes it's mommy's got so many problems, she's losing her mind right now, and I can't actually give you the time you want because I'm regulating, or I'm medicating. And so as the kids get older, there's this tension that begins to build is, am I going to pay attention or not? And it's interesting, kids start out, most children start out asking for it, but if time goes by and you just keep shutting them down, there usually comes a place where they stop. So Angie and I have four kids, our twin boys, all of our kids ask for attention. So if your kids like mine, like, Daddy, watch, Daddy, watch, Daddy, watch. So with my twins, it usually was physical. Usually it meant all the pillows were taken from the couch and put at the bottom of the staircase. And standing at the top of the staircase, one of my twin boys was going, Daddy, watch! And I would be like, I don't think this is a good idea. Pah! Bam! And, you know, like, and then they just laugh hysterically, like, wasn't that awesome? And then the other kid would emerge at the end, what, Daddy, watch! Oh, wait, your brother's, whoa, bam! And they'd land on each other's heads, and then they'd both roll, and I'd be like, oh, dear God, well, I'm going to get, DCS is going to come and get, like, he just landed on his head. But then they'd roll over, ha, 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 let's do it again! So they'd run up the stairs. That was when Mom wasn't home. And it was, Daddy, watch, Daddy, watch, Daddy, watch. Then I have my 19-year-old, I have a daughter, 19, and hers was less physical, and it usually had to do with what she was wearing or what she was organizing. True story. We went to the shoe store, I'm trying on a pair of shoes, and I'm like, hey, Ashton, just wait over here for a minute, I'm gonna just try these shoes on. And I hear, Daddy, look. She's completely reorganized the shelves at the shoe store. Like, they were kind of all over the place. They're all color-coded. She's got the price tags. They look nice. I'm like, did you want to hire an employee? She's four. And I have currently we have a 12-year-old who turns 13 next week. Angie and I were at the pool yesterday. And we went to the pool. Angie and I both took a book. We're kind of reading and talking. And, you know, I got my book, and I hear, Daddy, watch. Now, you have this opportunity in this moment. There's a couple different options here. One is, yeah, I am watching, but you're really not. I don't know if you've done that as a parent. Yeah, oh, that looked great. Good job. Don't drown. She's like, you know, so there's that option. But with our 12-year-old, that doesn't work real well because she's not afraid to share her opinion about things. And then the other option is to actually put the book down and pay attention. And, yesterday we were at the pool, and she was saying, Dad, watch. And, you know, I finally put the book down and locked in. And I started thinking about it. Like, she turns 13 next week. Like, she's probably not going to say, Dad, watch much longer. Because pretty soon, the way it works is, you know, they start asking their friends to watch. Or, dear God, she's going to ask some guy to watch. I get replaced. And I was just having this moment like, I should pay attention to this. And by the way, I don't think it actually ever really goes away. I think we're all asking somewhere down deep, Daddy, please watch. Mommy, please watch. Someone, please see me. You know, there's an aspect of that that's actually quite beautiful and innocent. Just see me. We lose our innocence as adults, and we get shut down enough times, we start to pick our places to be seen. But the desire doesn't go away. It's woven in the hearts of every single one of us. Sometimes we have to find that just in God, in some kind of aspect of prayer or contemplation. But God's designed us actually to be seen in people. But the only way you're going to be seen with another person is actually to be present. Now, I want you to think about this for just a second. What does it mean for you to be present? How about you? Think about this for you. Define that for you. When are you most present? What's happening with you? What's your posture? What's it like? Sometimes if you had a conversation with somebody who won't look at you and their back is to you and they're just always doing something else, maybe this was your experience with a mother or father and there was this attempt to have connection, attempt to have relationship, but the other person was just always preoccupied. To be present, open posture. If you had conversations with people, you try to talk to them, they're like this, yeah, so how's it going? You know, and you're like, can I just like pull your arm? But by the way, when people are doing this, there's usually, they're scared. They're guarded. They got hurt somewhere. And it takes a lot for someone to actually open up and go, okay, I'm safe with you. And then to really be present, where are you looking when you're having the conversation? The eyes are the window to the into me see. Here's the access point. So when's the last time you sat with a partner in life who's important to you, sat across the table and looked into their eyes? And maybe not out loud, but just says, who are you? And I see you. See, those may never form words. Like, what is it? Like, less than 10% of our communications are even words anyway. So much of our communication is nonverbal. It's an energetic exchange. But to be present, to just look into someone's eyes and acknowledge them, is to listen. It's to stop talking. Our subtitle for the series is Practicing the Proverbs, and Proverbs has a few things to say about this. Proverbs 29:11. A short-sighted fool always loses his temper and displays his anger. They enter into conversations, and they're immediately reacting. But a wise man uses self-control and holds it back. And we're going to see how anger is connected to talking in just a second. Proverbs 10:19, NIV version. Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongue. Same verse, New Living Translation, just because I like the way it sounds. Too much talk leads to sin. Be sensible and keep your mouth shut. It just has the ring of my grandmother's voice. I like the way that sounds. Do you know that sometimes we talk, especially if you're a verbal processor, all right? So don't go to shame here, verbal processors, but I just want to raise some awareness in case no one in your life has had a chance to get a word in edgewise. So I'm going to just perhaps offer some perspective. Or maybe this illuminates a relationship that's in your life and you can apply some grace and compassion. People who are compulsive talkers, usually they feel unsafe. So they talk at length because it's a way to actually feel safe. It's a control mechanism, sometimes to dominate the conversation, but the awkwardness of silence is too weird, or I actually don't want you to ask me any questions. I got a couple friends in my life, they're phenomenal question askers. And at first, I remember first hanging out, I'm like, man, this is really cool, they really care about me. And there's a part of that that's really true. But I actually never get around to asking them a question, ever, because they're so dang good. Now, part of it is they don't want to answer the questions because it's too exposing and it feels too vulnerable. Sometimes compulsive talkers just are afraid. So if there's a compulsive talker in your life, lead with some compassion and know maybe they feel emotionally unsafe. If you find that you are a compulsive talker, this is very difficult, so if you actually have this awareness, well done, then just ask yourself why. Remember last week when Angie and I were talking about just get curious. It's no shame, no guilt, but get curious. Proverbs is saying too much talk leads to sin. What it's saying is you actually will miss each other if you just talk all the time because you don't have a chance to actually get to know the other person. Now, there's another proverb that shows up in the New Testament. It's written by a guy named James. And it goes like this, James 1:19. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Now, with all the vices you could put in there, isn't it interesting? Because you could be talking about lust or envy or jealousy or some other behavioral thing we struggle with. Isn't it interesting he puts anger in there? Let every person be quick to hear, quick to hear. Not quick to retort. Not quick to react. Not quick to suppress. Not quick to shut down. Not quick to debate. Not quick to dominate. Quick to listen. So when the thing comes up with one of your partners in life, child, spouse, friend, bandmate, roommate, whatever, your fast thing is, I'm here to listen. What is it that you have to say? This is what James is saying. Slow to speak. I'm not going to talk over you. I'm not going to cut you off. Because James is telling me I should be quick to listen and slow to speak. And if I do this, perhaps it will help me be slow to anger. Remember last week, Angie and I were talking. We said, what would it be like to, instead of leading with, I have to be understood, leading with, I want to understand? That's what he's saying. Lead out by a willingness to understand. Martin Epo, probably my favorite poet, he says this. I'm going to quote him twice. He says, for to listen is to continually give up all expectation. I want you to imagine listening and giving up an expectation for where the conversation's going to go, how it's going to play out, and give our attention completely and freshly to what is before us, not really knowing what we will hear or what that will mean. Oh, this is so hard because we import meaning from our previous experiences. In the practice of our days, to listen is to lean in softly with willingness to be changed by what we hear. Now, I want you to imagine how your relationships might be different if you were quick to listen and slow to speak, and you leaned in softly with a willingness to be changed by what was spoken. Because you see what happens, it removes two dominant responses. Because most of us enter into conversation with two dominant responses. First is judgment. Well, that's wrong. Well, that's not right. We may not say it, or we might feel it. The second response, this tends to show up in the male gender quite a bit, is to fix it. Rescue. Well, I know how to resolve this tension. We'll do this, 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 and this. And by the way, you're talking too long because I already have the answer. I came up with the answer. I was coming up with the answer the whole time you were talking. So you weren't listening to me? Oh, no. Some of us probably haven't had a conversation in years, truth be told. You just exchange commentary. You just wait for the other person to stop. Blah, 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 blah. Really? Me too. Blah, 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 blah. Really? Me too. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, and I, blah, blah, and I, blah, blah. Great to see you. You too. It's a nice exchange of commentary. But you didn't see one another because neither person was listening. You were just queuing up your response. See how quickly that happens with us? We're not present. We're not listening. The truth is, at that moment, we're agenda-driven, and we're agenda-driven out of our own selfishness because we feel emotionally unsafe or because we feel like it's an opportunity to be clever. It's about maybe an opportunity to sound like we got the answer, to be an expert, to whatever the thing is. And so this conversation today is about just getting curious about what might happen in your conversations. And if you go, I had a guy say to me, you know the last message? He's like, this was in between services. He goes, yeah, I think I checked every box. Like, that was really very convicting. But I was healthy because it was convicting. Don't go to shame if you go, oh, man, I really screwed this up for the last 20 years. Like, the answer's not shame here. This is not your identity. You're a child of God. And if you have patterns where you go, I'm not very good at listening, that's okay, they can change. If you're willing to change, Proverbs 10:17, whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life. So if there's a pattern where you go, I'm just not naturally a good listener, or this is really a struggle for me, or this is really hard, you don't have to go, okay, so that's just the way it is. Discipline is to do the things that are difficult. Whoever ignores correction just winds up leading others astray. So the answer is just simply start with a teachable spirit that gets curious and go, yeah, I think that's me. I'd like to make some changes. Being disciplined often means to counter your habits and make choices irrelevant to your feelings. Most of us spend our time trying to arrange the world just so, as if finally we'll remove the tension. Have you ever tried to arrange the world just so and found that one person in one moment dismantled the whole thing? Yeah, but I thought the schedule said, but we were going to, but they were supposed to eat and they were supposed to go down for a nap. The coach told me, but the teacher said, and I can't believe, you said you were going to be home at what? And you can't figure out why you're losing your mind. Because the goal is satisfaction in perfection. The goal is satisfaction in emotional safety and everything being under control. The problem is it's just never fully under control. So we have to respond and recognize that satisfaction is fleeting and that we've got to lean in and trust and engage and be willing to acknowledge that we don't control the whole world. And there are times we have to put it all on pause just to simply be aware and present to the person in need. Anthony DeMello says this, many people, maybe most, don't truly live. They just keep their body alive. Have you been there? Have you had that season in life where you're like, I'm not thriving. I'm just medicating. Or maybe I'm bored. I've got a friend of mine, his name is Stephen Mansfield, and his company helps, I mean, they deal with politicians and CEOs and pastors and these people who have had massive just fallout in their life, massive failure in their life. And he said 95% of the time it's because somebody got bored. Just got bored. There's no purpose, no sense of passion, no direction for their lives. And I would submit they just failed to be present. They failed to appreciate at the smallest level the little things. Like here we are right now. It's June 2nd, 2019. We're in Brentwood, Tennessee. By the way, we're in a temperature-controlled environment, unlike the large majority of the world. Of the 7 billion people, we're in a minority that's in a temperature-controlled environment. Let's start there. Here we are together. We've gathered. Currently, for most of you, I'm going to assume, there's no one who wants to kill you. There might be a few of you. We're not doing this in secret. We've had a freedom to gather. You might be here with someone you know, maybe someone who's actually done something kind for you in your lifetime. This is a moment. That's beautiful. That's good. If we could be present to it, if we could see it for what it is, if we could slow down, let go of the regrets of the past, not get lost in the anxiety for the future. Just be present to here and now. It's good. N.T. Wright says, sin is not simply the breaking of a law, it's the missing of an opportunity. Sin being defined as anything that breaks our flow from our relationship with God. He talks a lot about how sin is just missing the mark. Like we were created for a beautiful relational exchange with God. And he's saying for this season, we are meant to find that in other people. Oh, we can find it in creation. And Jesus, I'm gonna actually read a verse on that. We find God in a lot of different ways, but we find it in people. But it takes work. It takes discipline. Joe Dispenza says, 95% of who we are by midlife is a series of subconscious programs that have become automatic. 95% by midlife, I fit that category, memorized behaviors and habitual emotional reactions. 95%. I've got an unconscious program taking me through life. So he says, how much of our day are we actually functioning just simply in our unconscious? By the way, this is why we need to create. This is why we gotta make stuff. This is why we love entrepreneurs. We love church planning. We love starting things. Like, go create something, make something. Don't get lost in just a habitual pattern where you're just existing. To be present is to be aware of the moment and to listen. Mike Mason says this, people are less like stationary stones and they're more like a river, always flowing, changing from moment to moment. If you can really see it underneath that programming, the beautiful, organic, deep-rooted, connected to God piece about every human being is they're always evolving and changing. Instead of going, you're just a static stone and going, oh, I don't like that person. Why? Well, they've changed. No kidding. Every human being is changing, is actually designed to change. So embrace the change. What typically that means when we go, they've changed, is I feel emotionally unsafe or I can't control them anymore. Have you ever felt that way in parenting? Oh my gosh, this adolescence. What's wrong? I can't control my child. They're independently functioning on their own. Dumb kid. Wait, isn't that part of the design? I don't know, but it's disrupting my world. But you actually, I mean, you're doing it right. Your kid's independently thinking. Oh, good. Why, oh, why is it so difficult to be present and to learn to listen? Richard Rohr says this, most people do not see things as they are, they see things as they are. Most of us lack objectivity just for seeing life the way it is because we're always seeing it through our own lens, importing our perspective, our view, our prejudice, our judgment. And for some of us, it's just a tendency to want to rescue. That's the hardest thing for listening for me. Someone wants to share something, my mind immediately is like, oh, I can resource you these five ways, and maybe you should try these three things, and I could give up my life and help run your life for you. Like, this is what's happening all in the moment. So my work is to just sit and go, oh, I'll just hold the space for you. Just listen. I don't know if you're married. I don't know if you've ever had this conversation with your spouse. Angie and I have had this a few times, where sometimes she wants me to listen, and sometimes she'd like my opinion. So we get to the place sometimes where I go, is this one of those times where you want my opinion or am I just supposed to listen? And she usually goes, just listen. This is a listening time. Okay. But it's taken us a while to figure that out, like which of these. And then my job is to come and not come with judgment and go, oh, I see where this is going. And to be open, to lean in and to let it be new. I'm working on it. Jesus teaching Luke chapter 12, 27. Look at the lilies, how they grow. Let them be an example to you. They don't work, they don't toil or make their clothing. Yet, and he uses a cultural reference that everybody in his day would have known. Yet Solomon in all his glory was not dressed as beautifully as they. Solomon had a lot of money, a lot of fashion. So if we wanted to import, you know, I don't know if he was a good looking guy, but if we imported a good cultural moment here, he's trying to give a comparison. He's saying even Ryan Reynolds in all his glory is not as beautiful as the lilies of the field. I realize some of you might argue with that. But he's saying, look at these are just flowers in a field. Just flowers. Do you see the simplicity of the moment? He's really saying, hey, stop and smell the roses. No, like literally stop and smell the roses. Like one of the best practices for some of you this week is to like go into Kroger or Publix and when you walk through the flower place, be like, hold on. Maybe like, Dad, are you okay? I'm being present. And look at the lily. Does it toil? Be a good teachable moment for your kids. You're like, my father's lost his mind. Does it toil? Does it care? Children, we're going to be like the lily today. Okay, Dad. But the slowing, the acknowledging, the seeing, and recognizing the beauty that surrounds us that we just run past is to be present and to recognize that so much of that beauty is just in one another. Again, I'll close with Mark Nepo. He says this, for beneath the life of problem solving, and isn't that where most of us spend a lot of our time? Up here in this surface-like problem solving. Beneath the life of problem solving waits the struggle to be real from which no one is exempt. It's really rich, but it's a sentence is packed, but just see if you can grab the essence of it. We each are asked to make our way through the drama of our bleeding, to the stripping of our will, through the tensions of our suffering, to the humility of surrender, where we might learn the ordinary art of living at the pace of what is real. It's in the ordinary. Some of you are going to go out, you're going to grab lunch together, and you're going to go to a restaurant, you're going to order your food, and you're going to sit and have a conversation while you wait for the waiter or waitress to deliver the food. By the way, your waiter or waitress is going to come. You're going to get lost in conversation and barely acknowledge them, or maybe you look them in the eye and acknowledge them. Maybe there'll be a moment where they feel seen. Maybe not. Maybe they're too preoccupied. Maybe some of you are going to go home and you're going to make dinner, and there'll be conversations by the sink and the stove, and then maybe you're around the dinner table. What will those conversations be like? Just an exchange of commentary? Or will there be genuine listening? In the ordinary art of living, in the daily routine, a recognition that every moment actually is sacred. And so the moments that you've missed that have gone by, no need to live in shame and regret. You can't do anything about those. But you can do something about now, in the moments to come. You know what Jesus says, he who has eyes to see and ears to hear? I think he's talking about truth and life. He who has eyes to see brings awareness of kingdom truth. When you can see something, you know what happens? When you see the kingdom, you have this transcendent confidence. Like, yeah, I see it. I've awakened to it. Ears to hear is an awareness to kingdom life. Pulsating, vigorous. There's something alive. And there's a sense of like truth that's a little bit more in your head, but life that you hold in your body. Like, wait a second. I want to live. I want to be present to the moments I'm alive and the people that I'm with and not miss them because I'm so dang preoccupied and distracted. It's actually, in that moment, a simple shift to slow your brain down, to look into the eyes of somebody close by and acknowledge what is real. Bow your heads and close your eyes with me. Stare at the floor, close your eyes. I want to do a meditation with you. Whatever helps you focus. If you want to put both feet on the ground, take whatever, move the stuff from, just take a deep breath. I want to read to you a passage from Scripture and let that be your meditation. And by that, what I mean is, would you just be open and say, God, I'm listening. Talking about practicing, listening to one another, I want to practice just listening for your voice. It's a simple verse, and I'm going to take some words off the end of the verse as we go through this meditation. Just say to God, I'm listening. No expectation. God might say something to you, might hear his voice, you might not, might just be enjoying the sacredness of the moment. You showing up, listening. All right, you ready? So posture of listening, give your attention to God. Listen to these words and reflect. Be still and know that I am God. the creator of all things, the great God and King, who has put his book down to look at you. Be still and know that I am. The truth is, he always sees you. He's always with you. He's beingness itself. Be still and know. Be still. Here it is. One last word. Be. Father, it's easy for us to get lost in our minds. Our philosophers have said, I think, therefore I am. And your word tells us, I am because I am. Simply to exist is to have value. We were your thought. We were your creation. We are your children. To just be. Is a display of inherent value. Before we've done anything for anyone. God, would we hold that core truth at the center of who we are. That we were created in love, by love, for love. From that grounded place, would we be present to the goodness that surrounds us? Would we see the beauty and recognize the sacredness of all that is? Help us to trust you and one another, to look past the vessel, the costume, the earthen thing, and to see one another's brothers and sisters, fellow heirs to the throne. Thank you for placing us in the body of Christ. You went to prepare many rooms. You weren't building a house, but it was this wonderful metaphor that you were placing us. We belong here. Show us how to listen, live, and love. In Christ's name. If you want to remember the great gift Christ, we've got communion set up in the back and in the front, on the right side. You're welcome to come, take the bread, dip it in the cup. Remember the rescue operation of the Trinity. It's open to all. Just as the band sings, feel free to get up and move. continue to sit quietly and listen, pray, stand, sing. No rush. Enjoy being in the presence of God.